Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Wednesday, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. We're brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. I'm off tomorrow and Friday, so nothing but energy today. I am bringing the A game today. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, Jersey Mike's update. Feel good about that. A lot of stuff going. I mean, there's actually a ton of stuff. Some college basketball, more tension in Green Bay, 17-game schedule. We got a lot today, actually.
Congrats, UCLA. Los Angeles these days.
It really is. It feels like they're just being pulled in by the LA sports success. Everybody's winning in Los Angeles. I want to start with this, though. I'm not against new, okay? I consider myself somebody. I'm curious. I like to adapt and evolve on stuff, but not everything new is better. In fact, most new stuff is junk. It really is. Most new stuff is junk. I mean, all the apps they're bringing out now, they're not making our life better. They're just goofy. They're time wasters, which most of social media, we all live without TikTok. We can live without it. It's fun. It's cute. But, you know, let's be honest about it. Google, the search engine, is really what we all need. And I was seeing here yesterday, Justin Fields had a pro day. And according to one scout who texted Matt Miller, that was the best quarterback pro day I've seen in a long time. I'm thinking, I mean, Zach Wilson's like old news now, 48 hours later? Yeah, Zach Wilson's a typewriter today. He's a rotary phone. 2 days ago, Zach Wilson was amazing. But the new, hottest, latest is Justin Fields. Apparently, he's very fast. Like, I wouldn't know that. This is the addiction to new. We love new. Anybody notice the least talked about pro day so far? It's Trevor Lawrence, easily the best prospect. Anybody remember anything about Andrew Luck's pro day? I loved him. I don't. These are five headlines I dug up this morning. These are real headlines. This is not The Onion. Jamarcus Russell puts on impressive show for scouts. Johnny Manziel dazzles at pro day. Paxton Lynch flashes arm strength at a windy pro day. Experts heap praise on Dwayne Haskins. Blake Bortles shines at pro day. Three are a bust. One looks like a bust, and the other one's not a bust, but not very good. I understand. New and unproven, more interesting, easier to root for the underdog, not the favorite. The unknown is more intriguing. But Phil Jackson won one coach of the year, same as Sam Mitchell. LeBron's got four MVPs, that's it. I mean, come on. I understand new and shiny and lit. Zach Wilson's pro day 2 days ago was swear to God, it was TikTok. And now it's like, oh, Justin Fields. It's like Hollywood red carpet. You see the red carpet for shows, and the cameras just go to all the new, beautiful young people. And then Meryl Streep, who's been the best actor in Hollywood for about 40 years, walks by behind them. Nobody asks a question. Like, Meryl Streep is really the greatest actor of our time. But hey, there's a 17-year-old who is tearing it up on Instagram. Nobody cares. I understand wealth and success is boring. We don't write articles anymore about Walmart and Microsoft, two of the four biggest countries in the world. And I understand that Trevor Lawrence for 3 years has been so good that it's all we talk about. But never forget that he is closer to a prodigy. It doesn't matter where he lands. It didn't matter where Andrew Luck landed. He landed in the worst possible place and still got to an AFC championship. Andrew Luck got to an AFC championship. GM incompetent, coach got fired, O-line worst in the league, awful roster. That's Trevor Lawrence. The other four quarterbacks are just prospects. Where they land will overwhelmingly determine if they succeed or fail. They're going to need the right O-line, the right system, a smart young coach, a non-meddling owner who's supportive, and an organization that has a plan and rarely steps into chaos. The other four are just prospects, and where they land is going to determine how successful they are. They're not good enough. Justin Fields is not good enough. Zach Wilson's not good enough to overcome a lousy offensive line and a horrible coach. Andrew Luck was, Trevor Lawrence was. And he's the least talked about pro day. Okay? I wish all these guys success. And I understand that Walmart and Microsoft are boring. I get it. And I understand new is easier to root for. But it's just absurd. The pro day, like every other day, it's the greatest thing you've ever seen. It's absurd. All right, get to college basketball in a second. NFL owners approved a 17-game schedule. And listen, the players, it's an extra game for a running back to hit a yards bonus or a wide receiver to hit a catch touchdown bonus. Players' share of revenues going up. More is the name of the game in sports. But here's the one thing about the NFL. And Roger Goodell for years took criticism because, again, they're harder to root for from the media because the NFL doesn't need the media very much. And the media likes to be important and likes to be loved and likes to be necessary. And the NFL doesn't really need you. And so there's always these shots at Goodell. And he's a great commissioner. He's a great commissioner. And a couple missteps. Of course, you don't think CEOs have bad weeks if you run a company for 15 years. But the NFL has been stealing real estate from all these other leagues for years. They moved free agency. They moved the draft into prime time. They started Thursday night games. They moved some more London games for early Sunday windows, and now they've added an extra game. The NBA is obsessed with making sure all their players are happy. Baseball, obsessed with tradition. The NFL's like, what's a better television show? What creates more revenue? And how can we give our fans more of what they love? Us. It's that simple. The NFL sees openings and attacks them. It's all real estate. And now they own 11 months of it. College football can't even figure out how to own Labor Day. Think about this. Labor Day is wide open 3 days before the NFL season starts. It is your last weekend to own. And college football has that puppy for a decade, and they butcher it every year. I would have 20 football games on Labor Day. I would try to steal a little 5% of the NFL's thunder. You want to know the Labor Day college football games this year? On Sunday, 1, Notre Dame at Florida State. On Monday, 1, Mississippi, Ole Miss at Louisville. You've got to be kidding me. If the NFL guys, Goodell, ran college football, they would have their biggest programs, their biggest stars, their biggest brands on Labor Day. You're wide open. But by the next weekend, guys like me have to make decisions on college and pro football. I can't tell my wife. I get Saturday and Sunday in front of the television. I have to make decisions. Okay, I'll watch one college game and NFL. That's the decision married guys have to make. And so the NFL is just smart and they're tactical. You know, they slowly allow Amazon. You get Thursdays now, but we'll still give our big games to the broadcast networks. Cable, we'll give you a couple. The NBA, basically, and everybody loves Adam Silver, sold all their games to cable. All of them. Cord cutting, cable losing audience. The NFL is smart and tactical. They're not burdened by, you know, the past. They're not burdened by, our players, we got to make, their players make a lot of money. Players love the NFL. They work with their players. They don't bend over backwards for every player or every issue. It's how you run a business. It's grown-ups. Listen, if I was a running back, I probably wouldn't want to play a 17th game, but I'm going to go to my agent, build an incentives. So if I do play that 17th game, I'm going to hit my bonuses and make more money. In the end, players' revenue share goes up, hit more incentives and bonuses. You know, people freak out about, oh, there's just too much of it. You got to have less. Listen, we live in a time of more. More games, more franchises, more sports networks, more shows. That's the reality of what we live in right now.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
How in the world did I think Gonzaga would be threatened by USC? And number two, how the hell did UCLA get here? Let's start with the Zags. Their offense doesn't even look like any other offense in the tournament. Their offense has no identifiable weaknesses. They can score with two bigs. Both will play in the pros. One this year will be a lottery pick. They really have two clever point guards, so you can't press them. They're a brilliant passing team. Almost never take a bad shot. Rarely pick up the dribble. They're well coached with a solid bench. They can score quickly, but they're also patient. They play fast, but are never seemingly out of control. I've never seen a college basketball team, and they're not the most talented. Akeem and Drexler and Larry Mushu for Phi Slamma Jamma were more vertical. But I've never seen a college offense that looked like it was scrimmaging. It's like a pickup game. It just moves so effortlessly, and they didn't even play great last night. They missed over 10 layups. And Corey Kispert, their number two player, was kind of off. USC multiple times, well coached, changed defenses. Zone, man, trap. Had no effect. Had absolutely no effect. It's not the most talented offense I've seen, but it's the smoothest. It's the most well-balanced. It may be the best passing college team. I covered Jerry Tarkanian's Larry Johnson, Stacey Augmon teams. Those teams were talented, but if Greg Anthony got in foul trouble, the offense stalled. This offense is deep, smooth, well-coached, fast, plays with tempo, can slow it down, big score, guard score, bench scores. There's nothing else like it. USC had handcuffed everybody. They handcuffed Kansas, Oregon, good teams. This thing was over in 6 minutes. Now let's talk about UCLA. I don't understand UCLA. They were bad at the end of the year. They lost their last four regular season games. This is the only team in the history of the tournament that's been outshot in four straight games, and they're in the final four. They don't shoot particularly well. They have one player, Johnny Juzang. One player scores a majority of their points. Their best two players this year, this was going to be a disastrous year. Their best two players aren't here. They had a freshman guard. He went to the G League. And then their best big and their best scoring big got hurt. This is a rebuilding year. This is a retooling year. Their last four games to get into the tournament, like, people didn't think they would get into the tournament. They were a play-in team. And I picked Michigan State to beat them because I live in Los Angeles and watch them. And maybe it's just the Los Angeles thing. Like, everybody now is magically winning. The Clippers and the Lakers and the Dodgers, everybody's winning here. But it is hard to figure out. You know what's funny is that it's interesting. Mick Cronin was not the first choice for UCLA, and nobody liked the hire. And Pete Carroll got hired at USC, and nobody loved that hire. Go back and read the LA Times on the archives. It's interesting how often the coach that's not as appealing, doesn't have the sex appeal. Remember, John Calipari was up for this gig. Where's John Calipari? Couldn't make the tournament. And Mick Cronin, in a better conference, not only made the tournament, this team, the best asset I can say about UCLA, they play really hard. They play really, really hard. But it's interesting. This was not the coach that people wanted. And he may just be perfect. UCLA has something that often a flashy program doesn't have. They have grit. They're tough. They play hard. They play like an underdog. They play like a mid-major. And it is just absolutely fascinating to watch.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman. And I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, the Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
Fox Bet now has the Niners as the favorite. The betting market has changed. In Vegas, Fox Bet, Justin Fields now goes to the Niners. So I follow the betting markets. When the betting markets change, it's a pretty good idea. They're not building more casinos because they're wrong more than they're right. So I said to myself, okay, so every time new information comes out, let's just do a new top 10 mock draft. It's fun. We can all play along. So you ready to go?
Let's do it.
All right, number one. All right. So this is the easiest pick on the board. There's only two easy picks on the board. This is one. Jags get Trevor Lawrence. First of all, he fits geographically. Urban Meyer has a history of working with young quarterbacks. His whole career was Tebow and Alex Smith. He is the prodigy, if there is such a thing in football. Yesterday they were talking about, I was reading a website talking about the pros and cons. And the pros were just about everything. The cons are occasionally struggles with accuracy, but that's mostly when he plays like, you know, Ohio State's front or LSU's front. Number two. All right, second easiest pick. It looks like the Jets like Zach Wilson. You know, listen, if you take a quarterback one and two, one of them doesn't work. He's got Robert Saleh. Is it going to work? I don't know. I think he's a little slender, didn't beat the best competition. But this is the pick. Everybody likes him. He's got a nice arm. So Zach Wilson goes to the Jets. 49ers now. The betting markets have moved to Justin Fields. Very, very highly coveted prospect. He and Trevor Lawrence for the last 3 years have been the guys. They've been camps together. He's from Georgia. Now, I thought Atlanta would have a hard time passing on him, but it's really interesting how I thought this morning. So, at least I think so. So, Justin Fields goes to the Niners 3. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't think Atlanta needs a quarterback, but I'm going to go Atlanta drafting Trey Lance 4, and here's why. Trey Lance, like Josh Allen, smaller school, really could use the right staff, the right coach, and a year to learn. I think Atlanta now looks at him and thinks, this kid's great. We know whoever we draft is not going to play in year one. If you draft Justin Fields and Matt Ryan has a two-game losing streak, and Justin Fields is from Georgia, fans are going to want to see Justin Fields. They're going to want to see Zach Wilson. But fans haven't seen Trey Lance play. He is a prospect. And so you can put Trey Lance on the burner for 2 years under Arthur Smith, and by the middle of the second year, you've played him in exhibition games. The fans are patient. Matt Ryan's still good. So I think Trey Lance now, that feels right to me, goes 4 to Atlanta. Number 5 is Cincinnati. They don't take big risks. There's two great offensive tackles. I'm going to go, they draft the Big Ten tackle. It's in their geographical footprint. It's a very conservative organization. They already have a very good left tackle. They're going to go get Northwestern's Rashawn Slater, who can go interior or on the tackle. Matched that very well against Chase Young. And again, it plays well to their Midwestern conservative base. He's a Big Ten player. He could be left tackle, but many people think he's more dominant on the interior. And to protect Joe Burrow, who's already hurt, I think it's a solid pick. Number 6, what has Miami been doing in the offseason? Getting players to help Tua. They get Kyle Pitts. Number 6, you can line him up anywhere. It gives coaches great flexibility. Devontae Parker, they added Will Fuller. Many people think they're going to build O-line and go for running backs. So this is a best friend for a young quarterback is a lively, athletic tight end. Go ask Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, Carson Wentz and Zach Ertz. Quarterbacks that are young, learning the game, love to rely on a 75 to 85 catch tight end. Kyle Pitts to Miami. Detroit 7 needs a lot of defense, but they lost Kenny Golladay. I think they have to give Jared Goff a weapon, and they get Ja'Marr Chase, who I think's the most NFL-ready wide receiver. That's what my scouts think. He looks like a pro. He acts like a pro. He's an alpha. He'll demand the ball. But you can't bring Jared Goff over, lose Kenny Golladay with a weak offensive line. You're going to look so ridiculous as an organization if Jared Goff is struggling and Matt Stafford is flourishing. You're going to get crushed by the Michigan media. You got to get him some weapons so Goff is at least semi-comfortable. Ja'Marr Chase to the Lions. Somebody always drops that's gifted. Penei Sewell goes to Carolina. I don't think Matt Rhule's going to fall in love with Mac Jones. They'll play Teddy Bridgewater or get Sam Darnold. This is the best player who drops. Listen, whoever they have at quarterback, this is a 10 to 15 year left tackle. We see this every year in the draft. There's a great player, and because of needs, he drops four or five spots. I'm going to guess Penei Sewell. Again, last year they went heavy defense. Carolina's going to go offense. I still think they make a move and get Sam Darnold. Number 9, Denver's the toughest pick for me. They've got a million needs on defense. In free agency, they went and got Kyle Fuller, a corner. They could go get another corner. But I'm going to guess here that they're going to go with Micah Parsons, who is easily the best linebacker, super fast, best Big Ten linebacker, best linebacker in America. They're a bad defensive team, and they have a defensive coordinator running the organization. And last year, they went big into receivers and big into offense. And all they've done is care about offense. And Vic Fangio's like, I got a couple of pass rushers and nobody else. So they went and addressed corner and Kyle Fuller. They go get a, he'll start day one for Denver at linebacker. And number 10, Dallas. This is kind of easy. They get one of the two corners. How about Patrick Surtain? Big brand Alabama to big brand the Cowboys. I think this is an easy one. This is the third easiest pick. They got to put some money on the defensive side. They have one young corner they really like. And then it's a lot of guys, they pay a lot and aren't very productive. So that's my mock draft. I think the first, the second, and the 10th pick feel like the easiest one. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. Of course, I love the draft. A lot of it's speculation. Some of it's need. Some of it, like I think Cincinnati has to get an offensive lineman. Joe Burrow's the franchise. You could go get Kyle Pitts. It wouldn't shock me. But Joe Burrow gets hurt one more time, it changes the trajectory of Joe Burrow's career. Kyle Pitts, to me, is the best athlete in the draft. He's a tight end. And again, I grew up in an era when tight ends mostly blocked. And then you saw an Ozzie Newsome. Then you saw Kellen Winslow. And then it was like, game on. Vernon Davis was the last tight end that went to a combine. And I thought, oh, actually, the best athlete is a tight end. And increasingly, we're seeing these 6'5 and 6'6 athletes. They're too skilled to put on defense. They may be a little big to put at receiver, but they're taking over the game.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So this KD Michael Rappaport thing is... KD had to apologize. Everybody's always apologizing to KD because they hurt his feelings, but he had to apologize for some foul, gross, vile direct messages he sent to actor Michael Rappaport. It went from just kind of busting each other up, which you do, to ugly. I don't know the rules of the internet. I thought when people direct message you never take it public. I thought that was private, but you can and people do. And you got to know, be careful about what you text and what you do on DMs. It goes public. I've always had this theory. Whenever guys act tough, there's the guy that in there's 30 and 4 act tough. You're hiding something. You're hiding your anger, your resentment, your insecurity. KD can often be tough guy. But what you find is he's very insecure. Everybody's always having to apologize. A newspaper once called him Mr. Unreliable. They had to apologize because his feelings were hurt. Steve Kerr last week essentially had to apologize because of something he said on a podcast that could offend KD. I mean, KD is brittle physically and sometimes brittle emotionally. Remember when he was a free agent and everybody knew he was going to leave? And people kept asking about him. He got upset about that.
Y'all come here every day ask me about free agency, ask my teammates, my coaches, you rile up the fans about it. Y'all let us play basketball. That's all I'm saying. And now when I don't want to talk to y'all, it's a problem with me. Come on, man. Grow up. Grow up.
Maybe KD needs to. Instead of confronting his issues with Russell Westbrook and the coaches, he just bolted. Instead of confronting Draymond Green and his issues with Steve Kerr, he just bolted. Maybe KD needs to grow up. Men confront their problems. Kids don't. They run. The reality is here, everybody's always walking on eggshells around KD. Don't offend KD. Don't get mad at KD. When I see those missives and those angry, vile shout-outs or whatever you want to call them on DM, I see a guy that's his exterior is hiding the interior, which is deeply insecure. He's a great basketball player. Nobody would deny that. He's absolutely unreliable. Amazing. But I want to talk about unreliable. About 5 years ago, and I see this all the time, I am obviously very critical of certain quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield, I was very critical of. Let's just use Baker. Johnny Manziel is another. And I said, there's a difference between being talented and I'm going to build the franchise around you. Like, I can build the franchise around Russell Wilson or Tom Brady. Those personalities, Matt Ryan, I can build a franchise around those personalities. But again, a lot of people in broadcasting are talented. I'm not building my company around them. They're like immature. They get into trouble. They say dumb stuff. They do dumb stuff. They're inappropriate. And when anybody years ago would say, KD's better than LeBron, I'm like, God, you're just seeing a tiny part of building around. LeBron, 20 years, has been the face of the league. He carries the ratings. He carries the brand. LeBron doesn't play the ratings go into the tank last week. He carries the entire league. And in 20 years, and LeBron had no easy life growing up. In 20 years, LeBron's had one, their word, not mine, misstep, the decision. Yeah, he gave $1 million to a Boys and Girls Club. Oh, shudder, the shame of it. But a lot of people, including the commissioner, thought it was kind of cruel and mean to Cleveland. Whatevs. That's the knock on LeBron. Can you imagine? And LeBron had a hard childhood. 20 years. I mean, Justin Bieber unraveled after about 7. Music stars, actors, unravel after about 4 months in the headlines. LeBron has been front and center of this league, carrying it for 2 decades. No missteps. Now, you may not like his politics, but that's not a misstep. That's just how he believes and how he feels. But it's remarkable. I mean, this was a kid who grew up, LeBron, with chaos in his life. Didn't know where he's going to live. Basically had a surrogate father, a coach. No missteps. I don't know Kevin Durant's background. I'm sure he had some wonderful people in it. But Kevin Durant struggled a year into Golden State. He struggled in Oklahoma City. Struggling now. He's obviously got some anger stuff in Brooklyn. So it's not that Kevin's not a great talent. I could never build around him. I said this before. I said this week. I had 4 or 5 guys I could build my franchise around. I could build it around Steph. Mature, great, gets banged up a little, but I know he's selfless. I could build it around LeBron. Increasingly, I could build it around Jimmy Butler. I think the guy Jokic in Denver is rock solid. But that's, whenever I criticize quarterbacks, I'm not picking on them. Baker's talented. Do I want to put my $5 billion franchise in his hands? Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Andrew Luck, they're just built for it. I trust them. And LeBron has been the emotional and physical rock of the league for 18 years. You can just rely on him. You can make him play a game back-to-back, put him on TV, go to the bubble. What was the only team in the bubble, the only veteran-laden team that played well? LeBron's team. Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Giannis, other veteran teams, Simmons, Embiid, all the other teams with veterans. LeBron's team flourished. Why? Because LeBron had a meeting about 8 games in and said, fellas, it stinks. We miss our wives. We miss our kids. But we're in this thing. We're in a pandemic. Let's rule. Let's take this thing over. And they did. And it just one of the, oh, you're such a LeBron homer. It's the burden of having to carry a franchise. The burden of, yeah, look, Bill Gates has made a lot of money, but he has been the face of Microsoft for 45 years. So when idiots pick on him on Twitter, I'm like, do you understand? 45 years, Bill Gates hasn't had a misstep. Elon Musk tries to go a weekend without one. So it's like the rock of the NBA is LeBron. And when you compare him and Durant, Durant's not, you can't trust Durant physically. And increasingly on an emotional level, you get this awful stuff. I don't think Kevin's a bad guy. I don't. I really don't. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he's dealing with stuff personally that, you know, therapy could help, social circle could help, whatever. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think good people say dumb stuff on social media. I think it I've done it. Like, we all have a temper. Somebody pokes us. You know, we get all riled up. I don't think KD's a bad dude. And I think he's a remarkable player. But the difference with LeBron and Durant is emotionally and physically, when I saw this story break, the first thing I thought of was LeBron. Like, LeBron would never put himself in this. Would never get involved in this stuff. LeBron, pull back. Stay out of it. You know, you, and I'm not taking sides. Michael Rappaport, it was a DM. I'm not a big fan of taking DMs public. I don't think that's some people don't like that. I don't know. What's the rule on that?
I mean, I don't know that there's a rule on it, but in general, like, we all know everything that you text or say on the phone can be screenshotted.
So it's okay. I always thought DMs were private.
I wouldn't say it's okay.
Okay.
If I know somebody screenshots stuff, I generally don't say much to
screenshot
them.
Being you DM me, I take a shot
take
of
a
it.
Picture of it, yeah.
All right. The lexicon's very confusing to me. It's all out. It's all new.
I don't know that there's rules.
Well, I've told my wife, be careful what you text. In the next 10 years, all our texts will be public. I believe in the next 10 years, all our texts will be public. Somebody will find your text and put them out there. So my texts are all day, love you, world's great, no enemies, what's for dinner, I'd like chicken parm. Even my texts are vague now.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
And a couple days ago, I suggested that Zion's made so much money in endorsements. He's so likable, so dynamic as a kid, that he's not going to need to necessarily re-sign with the first team that drafted him. Now, every player always has, because it's the max money. You can make tens of millions of dollars. When I suggested, with his injury history, he may just want to go move to a winning team, be a piece, make his money with shoes. Antonio Daniels, a broadcaster for the team, not in love with that comment, now joins me live. I don't know. I thought it was a reasonable comment. You did not. You did not think it was reasonable. Why?
Well, here's my question. Why are we even talking about a young man that is yet to play 70 games going to play elsewhere? First and foremost, because he's playing in New Orleans. That's why we're talking about this. If he was playing somewhere else, if he is playing in LA or if he is playing in New York, we would not be having this conversation. And when we talk about him in the future going to play somewhere else, what we are forgetting is what David Griffin and Trajan Langdon have put together here now as far as the future is concerned. I tell you this, Colin. I just had a one-on-one with Zion about 20 minutes ago. And one of the things he said was the same thing that Lonzo Ball said. So when you talk about Kyra Lewis being 19 years old and Jackson Hayes being 20 and Zion being 20 and Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram, who's an all-star, and Josh Hart, who's 26 years old. So when you talk about that as far as the future is concerned, why are we talking about going to play elsewhere? Like, the future for the New Orleans Pelicans right now isn't a bright one.
Well, they're still a game and a half out of a play-in game. So I think there's some frustration that they're talented, but veterans win in this league. They're young kids and they're years away. That's I look at them and I think they're fun, but they're not a title contender for years. Is that fair?
Yeah. Oh, of course. Of course that's fair. Because again, we're talking about a Zion Williamson that's yet to play 70 games. And what we're doing is we are throwing expectations on youth and inexperience that they don't deserve yet. This team shouldn't be talking about titles right now. They should be talking about development right now, which is exactly what David Griffin is doing. He is putting together a young team organically. with good drafts, drafting Nikhil Alexander Walker, drafting Kyra Lewis, drafting Jackson Hayes, Zion Williamson, and then getting the Brandon Ingrams, the Josh Harts, and Alonzo Balls in the AD deal. So no, you shouldn't be talking about a championship right now. But realistically, how many teams in this league are talking about a championship right now? This is not their championship window. This is a time for them to grow together, to learn together, and to lose to a certain extent. But let's see if we're having this same discussion 3 or 4 years down the line when these guys are more experienced.
Okay, so let's say they don't make the playoffs this year, and then next year they don't take a big leap and they're a one-and-doner. When do you, Antonio Daniels, get impatient and go, okay, we got to make a move here or Zion's going to consider leaving us?
Okay, so now here's the thing, Colin. Just as hypothetical as you can say, what if they don't make the playoffs this year? And what if they don't make the leap next year? What if they do make the playoffs this year and they do make the playoffs next year? That's the question I'll ask you.
Then I think Zion's going to be really happy. But that puts a lot of pressure because he is so great and so well compensated in endorsements that there is the sense that he doesn't, you know, one of these young players is eventually not going to sign with their team that drafted him. Somebody's going to do it because the money is now so great. Don't you think there is a little institutional pressure that by next year, if they're not winning, to maybe make a deal to get W's?
Well, I mean, the thing is, you can say that amongst all the young teams in this league. So when we talk about why isn't this guy playing in a bigger market? Why didn't you say, well, what about Ja Morant? We're not talking about him going and playing
elsewhere. But I don't think Ja Morant is a face of a league player. I think Ja Morant's great. Zion, to me, is the face of the league.
Okay. And why can't he be that face of the league here in New Orleans? You just said it. So if we look at bigger markets, so to speak, right? If we look at bigger markets, you just said it. He has a 2K sponsorship. He has a Gatorade endorsement. He has a Brand Jordan endorsement. And this team, meaning the Pelicans, is second as far as national TV games are concerned. One game behind the Lakers. So what is there to offer that he's not getting here right now is my question.
Well, wins. That's it, wins. I worry that
he's 20.
Well,
he's 20 years old, Colin, and he's only played in 68 games. If we're talking about winning now, there are a lot of teams out there that you can say, oh, well, you know what, maybe this guy or maybe that guy. We are talking about a young man that is 20 years old and has played in 68 career games in 3 different stints. So last year, remember, when he first started playing, he was under a minutes restriction. Then March 11th came, the season was postponed. Okay, then you go to the bubble. Then he has to leave the bubble for a family emergency. Then he comes back. Now we start this season up. Remember, it's amazing to me how much the narrative around this young man has changed. Remember last year when everybody's like, oh, you know what? He's overhyped. Or why are they playing on national TV all the time? Or maybe he's not all about the hype. And now the narrative has changed to, oh, well, maybe this young man is special. And the moment that people start to figure out what we have talked about from day one of training camp, that he is one of one in the history of the sport, now we want to say, oh, let's move him to a bigger market. That's not fair to the fan base of New Orleans or Zion Williamson and his teammates. That's why I'm so passionate about this team.
What is he like as a kid? What is he like as a
Fantastic.
Person?
Fantastic. Fantastic. And that's the thing. So last year when he was going through all the scrutiny about being injured and about this and about that, if people understood the young man and the heart that he has, the humbleness that he came into this league with and that he still possesses today, and the interview I had with him earlier today, it was all smiles. It was all laughs. He's incredibly humble and he is a joyful young man to be around. He's fantastic.
Some people say he should be your one and Brandon Ingram should be the two. Do you worry about that dynamic?
I don't. Because the thing is, they'll figure it out. There are some nights where B.I. will be forced to close. There are other nights because of Zion's skill set and his ability to dominate in so many facets of the game where he'll be the closer. Again, it's interesting when you're in this kind of market how narratives are thrown out there to try and splinter this team apart. Oh, well, who's the number one and who's the number two? You know what? They will figure it out without our help.
By the way, I did release my list yesterday, if my guys have it in graphics. I said if you ask me the five guys in a five-year window to start a franchise with, I picked Zion over Luka because I think there's a merchandising angle. I also think he gets your best bigs in foul trouble, where I think Luka may be the better pure scorer, but I think the efficiency, his physical dynamic, he fouls out your bigs. You can, he's a merchandiser's dream. Luka, Zion, I mean, do you worry all about that? We got a minute left. Only thing I worry about is injuries. Do you ever get worried about that?
I don't. Right now, I'm not at that point because he hasn't given me a reason to. Earlier last week, he put up 77 points in 72 minutes on back-to-back nights. And again, so with shooting 65, 67% from the field. So I get the thought process around some of this, but what we're seeing with the startup of this NBA season, there is no minutes restriction. People used to hold that against him. He hasn't been injured. People used to hold that against him. He's playing in back-to-backs. People used to hold that against him. What he's doing is he's blowing through everything that everybody used to throw against him. And you know what he's doing? He's doing it quietly. He's doing it humbly without saying a word. He is humbly dominating this league right now, and he is truly a blessing to cover.
I like your passion. You're really good today. I like that. You know, I figured out the key to you is to tick you off. If I tick you off a little, bring you on, you got a long motor.
Hey, you know, I was told, Colin, keep bringing your passion. That's how you're going to make your mark. That's all I know. And I tell you one thing I'm passionate about. I am passionate about this New Orleans Pelicans basketball team and this awesome fan base.
Good seeing you, buddy. Love your work. Antonio Daniels.
Appreciate you, brother.